Today in Europe. This is the time of day when the Columbia Broadcasting System brings you news from abroad. And this is Bob Trout in New York about to call in CBS representatives for reports direct from Europe. Biggest news of the day was the signing of the three-power pact of mutual aid between Great Britain, France, and Turkey. While observers everywhere are now busy analyzing this treaty and its possible effects, all observers seem agreed that this is a diplomatic blow to Germany. First tonight, let's call in Germany for the latest reports from William L. Shirer. And for those reports, we take you now to Berlin.
Good evening. This is William L. Shirer in Berlin. For the first time since the war began, the German High Command today made public a detailed report about just what has been happening on that strange and mysterious Western Front. I know it doesn't agree exactly with what you heard from the other side, but so that you may hear both sides, I give you the German version. First of all, the report contends that nothing much at all has happened on the Western Front. Since September 9th, says the communique, when the French opened their attack with outposts along a line running from Luxembourg to the Rhine, there has been no serious fighting anywhere. With one exception, the fighting on both sides was limited to small groups, usually less than a company strong. The German report then explains that the French occupied German territory at three places, and only in two of them did the French penetrate as much as 2 or 3 miles. And with the exception of the area in front of Saarbrücken, close to the frontier, the French never really got close to the German West Wall fortifications, the report declares. As to artillery fire, the communique goes on, it was as restricted as infantry action. And along the Rhine River, where it forms the Franco-German border from Karlsruhe to Basel, there has been absolute quiet. I saw that sector myself last week, watched the French and German troops going about their business in full sight and range of each other, and I didn't hear a shot exchanged. The communique claims that 60 enemy planes, 12 of them British, were shot down on the Western Front, while the Germans only lost 11 planes. The High Command gives German losses on the Western Front up until October 17th as 196 killed, 114 missing, 356 wounded. Up until October 18th, the Germans say, they captured 25 French officers and 664 men. I think it's fair to note that while the German communique gives figures on French prisoners up until the 18th, it gives its own losses only to the 17th. I mention this because yesterday's High Command communique spoke of a large number of prisoners being captured on October 17th, and these evidently are included in the figures I've just cited. And we know that the French claimed very heavy German casualties on the same day, October 17th, and the German communique does not take into account its own casualties on that date. Note, too, no mention in this official German document of any German offensive during the last few days, such as was reported, I believe, from the other side. The German communique closes with a laconic paragraph that no British troops could be identified in the front line. In other words, according to the Germans, all has been quiet on the Western Front. I return you now to Columbia, New York.
That was Berlin. Now for the news from London, where today Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain was able to announce the Allies' first diplomatic victory of the war. A report tonight by Edward R. Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. The House of Commons cheered today's announcement of the signing of the treaty between Britain, France, and Turkey. In general, the provisions of that treaty had been accurately forecast for weeks. Two sections of it have been the subject of much speculation. The first is Turkey's agreement to come to the aid of the Allies if they're engaged in war resulting from their guarantees to Greece and Romania. That was welcome news in London. The second, and perhaps most important, is the provision which frees Turkey from the necessity of taking any action which might involve her in war with the Soviet Union. That provision in the treaty had also been anticipated. Political commentators here are pointing out that the treaty is not aimed against Russia. That would seem to be clear from the terms of the treaty itself. But Russia remains an important power, diplomatically at least, in southeastern Europe, while Italian ambitions in the Mediterranean will certainly not have been advanced as a result of the treaty signed in Ankara today. Now, we have some indication of the Italian attitude or reaction because the Rome radio has just been talking about the treaty. It is stated that Italy welcomed certain factors in the new Balkan situation brought about by the signing of the new three-power pact. Italy has been averse to seeing the Russian Navy become a new factor in the Mediterranean. So the alleged refusal of the Turks to modify the status of the Dardanelles is welcomed, because Italy feels it will be an inducement to Russia to remain neutral. For so long as the Dardanelles remain open to British and French ships, Russia can be attacked on the Black Sea. The Rome radio added that Turkey's maintenance of her pledges to Romania was taken as a suggestion that Turkey shares the Italian desire for a Balkan peace bloc. There is still no official news as to the nature of the demands put forth by the Russians in the course of the Moscow discussions with the Turkish foreign minister. But a number of political writers in this country are convinced that those demands, which caused the breakdown in the Russo-Turkish negotiations, originated in Germany. They maintain that the Russians presented them as a gesture to satisfy Germany, without caring very much whether they were accepted or rejected. London, Moscow, and Ankara continue to emphasize the existence of cordial relations between the Turks and Russians. Effective November 1st, British miners will receive an increase in pay. Adults will receive an additional 16 cents a day. Boys, 8 cents. It was announced today that everyone engaged in air raid precautions work is to be put into uniform. Uniforms will cost about $2.20 each. It'll be a sort of coverall arrangement for the protection of ordinary civilian clothes. You've been told before that this is a strange sort of war, a war that nobody wants, and from which many would draw back, even after it has started. There seems to be even an unwillingness to call it a war. One minister in the House of Commons today employed a new circumlocution when he spoke of the duration of the war as the currency of the present crisis. The rulers of the four Scandinavian states tonight issued a communique concerning their 2 days of talk. Briefly, the official statement reiterates the desire of Scandinavia to maintain complete neutrality, while each country maintains the right of self-determination. They will pursue this policy by collaborating, as they did successfully in the last war. Regarding the difficulties which neutral shipping has suffered, they will maintain traditional commercial connections on all sides. Meantime, these Nordic countries are ready to work in the service of conciliation. And now for the news from Thomas Grandin in Paris. Go ahead, Paris.
This is Paris. The conclusion of the Franco-British-Turkish Pact, according to the Paris press, will have a considerable effect upon the situation in the Balkans. Çavuşoğlu, it's felt here, was clever to maintain relatively friendly relations with Moscow. The main impression in Paris seems to be that Turkey has given proof of a desire to maintain strict independence and refuses to be under the tutelage of Russia or Germany or any other country, including England and France. It's pointed out, however, that whereas heretofore there were separate treaties between Turkey and France and between Turkey and England, now all three powers have signed a mutual assistance accord that precludes any sort of separate peace if there should be aggression in the region which particularly interests Turkey. General Weygar is in Ankara now. Von Papen has returned to consult with German officials at Berlin. It's thought Von Papen tried to prevent today's pact from being signed, and therefore his success in negotiating the Soviet-German treaty is somewhat eclipsed. The Council of Ministers, which met here this morning at 10 o'clock, decided upon important measures of local interest and carefully considered the international situation, with particular reference, probably, to the Stockholm Conference. It's felt here, according to the Inquisition, that Mr. Roosevelt's note to Kalinin had a moderating influence upon Russia's demands with respect to Finland. Jean Souvenir, writing in the Inquisition, declares that if the Stockholm Conference makes an appeal for peace, it will not mean Hitler's kind of peace. And now for a report from Columbia's special correspondent with the British Army, Mr. Bill Henry. Go ahead, Bill.
The remarkable story of an army which lives by air was told rather unexpectedly in France today when Sir Kingsley Wood, chief of the British Air Ministry, was sloshing about in the mud on a tour of inspection of the Royal Air Force fields and billets in France. Stopping at the hospital to see a couple of chaps who were being treated for minor injuries, the Air Minister divulged that every Royal Air Force casualty of the war who has been injured in France has been invalided home by air. He added that the new aerial ambulances carry complete blood transfusion units so that the wounded men requiring that sort of treatment may not only be well supplied in France, but may receive additional treatments en route to England in the giant flying ambulances. In paying tribute to the success which made the entire transfer of the Air Force units in France had been carried out, the Air Minister added that not only had the entire overseas group of flyers reached France with only one minor mishap, but that during their first 12 days in France, they had lived entirely on food transported daily from England by air. Sir Kingsley returned to England tonight, but you should know about another airman. We all got to talking. Today we were complaining about the lack of excitement for the correspondence, and the flyers were talking about their ennui. And it developed that this young chap, a Frenchman, had been one of eight Frenchmen who went scouting over Germany a few days back and, quite unexpectedly, were caught by a squadron of German Messerschmitts. In the course of the battle, during which the Frenchmen and their American Curtiss fighters found themselves involved with 15 Messerschmitts, the French recovered from their surprise, outmaneuvered the Germans, shot down two of them, and forced a third into a pancake landing, thus adding considerably to the glory of their squadron, which in the last war accounted for 35 German planes. It was only when they returned to their French airport and found their delighted French comrades laughing and offering congratulations that they realized that something peculiar had happened. It seems that the young pilot, who accounted for at least one of the two official victories of the afternoon, had left his microphone open in the plane, and the chaps on the field could hear the shots and the roaring engines in the background and a magnificent foreground of shouting and cursing by the pilot as he found himself surprised and then forced to swing suddenly into action, all the time swearing roundly at his German opponent and calling him the sort of names that anybody might use under such circumstances. And it wasn't until he told us about it today that he realized that, in all probability, he had given the first radio broadcast of an aerial dogfight, a history-making microphone appearance which, more's the pity, will live with all its lurid language only in the memories of the few field officers who heard it. I'll bet they'll not forget it any sooner than the young chap who was involved in it. We return you now to Columbia in New York.
And now here's word from Stockholm, where high Scandinavian authorities made these points tonight following that conference of the northern states. One, the Nordic states are willing to mediate in the European war whenever a basis satisfactory to both sides can be found. And two, these states are pledged to support Finland's independence under a joint policy of neutrality. Those 2 points come out of the Scandinavian conference. Now, just to remind you that at 8:55 Eastern Time, Columbia presents the nightly broadcast of Elmer Davis and the News. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.